pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for sticking with us on this Friday morning. 251-343-0106 if you want to respond to anything you're hearing on the program this morning. Still to come on the program, by the way, returning champion state senator Chris Elliott will be with us, so please stay tuned for that. Joining us now, he is the director of the board of, the Bureau of Pardons and Paroles, Cam Ward, on the line with us, former state senator from my old neck of the woods up in North Shelby County. Cam, good morning. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me back on again, Jeff. It's been a long time.
Yeah, it has. But now you're a completely different role. No longer, I guess you're a recovering lawmaker now is a proper title.
That's right, recovering politician. I served almost 20 years in the legislature and been doing this job here as director of Bureau for about not quite 2 years now.
Well, let's talk about the director of the Bureau and what you're doing, because I would assume, correct me if I'm wrong, that maybe you have a different vision for the Bureau's role in our criminal justice system, or maybe there's been some tweaks to it. But for our listeners' sake, kind of walk us through where you fit into that entire puzzle.
So what we do, we're separate from the board. You know, I don't have a say in who gets granted or denied parole. But what we do is, at the Bureau, we supervise roughly 44,000 people who are currently on probation or parole in Alabama. And so we're a law enforcement agency. We have just under 800 employees. Most of them are all law enforcement. And our job is to supervise them. Now, one wrinkle I've put into it is we do invest now a lot more, one of my big priorities, in addition to monitoring these folks to make sure they stay out of trouble, is we're really investing now heavily in drug treatment, mental health treatment, as well as potential job training for those who are on parole. Because if you treat those three things I just mentioned, or deal with those three things I just mentioned, the recidivism rate drops dramatically. And so the odds of someone going back to prison changes a lot. It's a law enforcement agency, but you also have a rehabilitation reentry aspect to it as well.
So since you've taken over, talk to us about, are you seeing progress made? Are you finding things that you've been able to improve upon?
Yeah, and it's slow moving now because, again, an agency this big doesn't change overnight. But I do feel like we're seeing some changes. We have what's called gay reporting centers. We have one in we have 10 of them total around the state, Mobile, Montgomery, Huntsville, Birmingham, all the obvious ones, but some rural ones too. What those centers do is, if you're on parole, we can mandate that you have to participate in programming there. And what we find is people who go there and get their drug treatment or their mental health treatment, it helps tremendously in making sure they stay on the straight path. So that investment there is showing good dividends with those who are on parole.
Now, talk to us about this. That special session last year, the state went ahead and pulled the trigger on the long discussed Perry County facility. I've been sitting there, it's now in the state's hands, and that's going to function as part of the Bureau, right? That you got to be able
correct.
To use that.
The legislature finally solved that Rubik's Cube, and I was there forever, and I could never solve it. They did finally solve that Rubik's Cube and get that problem solved. It's been debated since 2006 what to do with the Perry County facility. It's part of the compromise. DOC really couldn't ever staff it, so they didn't want it. But there were a lot of folks who wanted to get it off, you know, get it off their hands. So at the end of the day, the compromise was pardon and parole would take it, Bureau will take it, and we will use it as a reentry center for basically the same stuff I talked about with our day reporting centers. However, this will be kind of more on steroids. Anywhere from 300 to 400 people will be housed there, and they do the same thing I talked about, drug treatment, mental health treatment, and job opportunities. Ingram State Technical College is going to come in and do skilled labor training on people who are on parole. Ingram State's investing about $9 million to add a facility over there to do that. And, Jeff, we're having huge numbers of companies reach out to us saying, we're having trouble finding skilled labor. Can you help us find skilled labor so we can put them to work? We're paying good. We just can't find anybody. We feel like people on parole. If we put them with job placement and good jobs, the data shows they just never come back and commit a crime again. And I think that's something we all want, Jeff.
No, it's kind of off the beaten path. Well, or I guess beaten path Highway 80 there, a major thoroughfare. But it is isolated, let's say.
It is as far away from nowhere as you can get.
Are you having any, is there any issues there with making sure it's staffed properly and that all the concerns we had about it before this?
No, I haven't had that trouble. Now, we have a different situation here than what DOC has, but I have not had that problem. We'll probably have, once we cap out our staff there, about 40 people will work there. A little over half are going to be security guards. We have not had that trouble. We've had people from neighboring counties actually approach us wanting to work there. So far, the staffing's been great, Jeff.
Well, that's certainly a promising sign, because that was, if I was looking at it, that would have been, well, I don't know. I mean, it's like one of those places where you know where it's at, but there's...
It's hard to get there unless you're by helicopter.
Yeah. Well, at least you got Highway 80 there getting back and forth, and it's just kind of hanging out there in Perry County just barely, I suppose, too. But anyway, let's talk about the big picture here, and since you followed this so close over those years, the legislature finally pulled the trigger on new prison construction. It looks like next few years those ought to be up and running. Do you think that that plan is a good plan?
I do. I think the legislature is correct in the way they did it. I think it's a good plan because even though that will not solve your overcrowding, I mean, they're not building the way out of it. In fact, your capacity won't be a whole lot bigger than it is now. What they are doing is, and this was a direct point with the lawsuit filed in federal court, those prisons will have the programming for mental health services. And that was a big point of the lawsuit in front of Judge Thompson. So I think that was a big part of the plan to fix some of the corrections problems that we've seen in court. So, yes, I do think they did a good job with that. And everything I understand is they're on track and on time to finish the first one here. I think the first one finishes in like 3 years is what I remember correctly.
Do you think that's going to be enough to keep the feds kind of at rest to give them a chance?
Good question. One would hope. I think you're going to do some other stuff, not necessarily any new laws, but stuff like you're going to have to make sure you invest the financial resources in mental health therapy there at the prison. You're going to also have to invest more money into hiring more officers, which was a big part of what the Department of Justice argued later. So you're still going to put resources in for manpower and programming, but I think you couldn't do any of that if you didn't have these new facilities.
But at least there's going to be the resources there. At least the legislature has said, okay, we're not just building new facilities to house inmates. That you guys are going to have what you need to at least work toward accomplishing your mission, right?
Yeah, and something else a lot of people don't realize, they go, well, just repair the old. We have some, Kilby right down from my office here. Some of these were built just after World War II. You can't put another Band-Aid on that problem. And the problem is, in most, like down in Holman prisons, one of the worst, they have these massive housing dormitories where you have a gymnasium-sized room that you put everybody in one room, and it's a public safety hazard. Your officers will tell you that's the worst kind of setup you could have. So these new facilities will be very different from that.
Well, I think it's you that always explained it to me how we got here, that when the last time the feds came knocking at Alabama's door, well, George Wallace was governor, and then I think Flav James has wrote about it in his autobiography. But anyway, the Governor Wallace at the time kind of made it into being a jobs program.
Yep.
And you have these facilities in like places like Barber County and you know, spread out throughout the state, because that's what he was trying to do, use the prison system as some kind of economic development plan.
Yeah, Wallace used the prison system, the two-year college system. That was his economic development tool. And he would build these in all these communities around the state, and that's where it was. And short-term, it may have had some benefit. Long-term, not a good policy at all because it doesn't match where the needs are. And so you got to appropriate your money as to address where the needs are. And of course, Jeff, public safety is first and foremost on everything. And when you look at public safety, you can't make it into an economic development tool. Public safety is an economic development. Public safety is what do we got to spend, what do we got to do to make sure the public is safe.
Well, what do you make of, and this is going to come up this session, I'm convinced of it, but some of these early release type, unsupervised release type programs where you have some bad actors, and as you know, what happened in Bibb County with the sheriff's deputy, Nick Reiser, mm-hmm. up in the Shoals, that the legislature's already acted on that one, but that they're going to start looking at ways to peel some of these back or put more checks on that system.
One thing they have done already, and I just left a meeting on this, and this is a very important part of it. The legislature did something I thought was very wise in that they designated my agency as well as put the resources with it to start a massive electronic monitoring for certain high-risk folks on parole. And Jeff, I think to that end, because of what the legislature's vision was, I think starting next year, we could electronically monitor, I'm looking at my latest, anywhere from 2,000 to 3,000 people a year starting next year because of the legislature's investment. And I think that will go a long way in helping someone who is on parole. You know, the problem you had is if you say, we're just not going to parole anybody, then what happens when they get to their end of sentence, say EOS, that means they're out and no one has any legal authority over them anymore. So you want to have your thumb on them, but you want to do it in a way that's secure. Now, that means electronic monitoring is probably your best if you're on parole. Now, the Bibb County guy, when that tragedy occurred, the question I had when I first saw it was, he should have never been out of prison to begin with. I mean, he wasn't on probation or parole, so he wasn't on one of ours. But he never should have been out because he tried to escape, he assaulted officers. I don't know how he was still getting good time. And that's a question I guess somebody else had to ask, but that's what I don't understand because it just didn't make any sense how he was out. And also, why was he never prosecuted for escaping? Why was he granted bail when he's committed so many crimes, but we had a couple judges grant him bail? So there's a lot of things that can be addressed there. It's easy to look at it and say, well, we shouldn't have supervision or anything like that. That's the easy way to look at it. The complicated way is if you look at that case, there were multiple failures in his case.
Yeah, let me ask you, let's go back to the electronic monitoring that's going to be put in place. Do you feel like the state's equipped to monitor up to 3,000 people?
Yeah, it's just fine. Yeah, it's financial resources. I really do think we are equipped. They gave us, it's a little under $5 million once it's over with. But I think we are. The biggest thing people don't realize is it's our manpower that we're required to use in order to go get someone when they violate it. But I definitely do. And technology has changed so much, it makes it a whole lot easier to electronically monitor someone and pinpoint exactly where they are at any given time.
So that goes a long way. Speaking, though, back to the weird Bibb County situation, if you have that one instance there, the only reason it seems we know about it is because you had an officer killed in the line of duty. I mean, do you think that this is something that's maybe more widespread than we realize throughout the criminal justice system in Alabama?
People getting good time who shouldn't have got good time?
Yeah, any kind of time, but yeah, getting good time or out of work release, people that should not be out on the streets that are out on the streets.
I'm sure there are some. I mean, you know, if you look at any, of our, whatever, 40-something thousand people we have, I'm sure there's people you could pick in there and say, hey, they should have never been released to begin with. Good time is not, in my purview or my jurisdiction, but I will say that I'm sure there are. I think the police shooting was just, that one in Bibb County really jumped out because it was a police officer and it was so horrific. How many people are out and shouldn't be out? We could always second guess ourselves all day. And never get the right answer. I do think the Attorney General is correct, though, in looking at good time just to make sure it is truly equitable and is applied the way it's supposed to. And so I think he's onto something there, and I think the legislature will try to tackle that the next session, as you said, Jeff.
Yeah, I do think that. I think you're right about
and
that.
And I think the AG's onto something there. I think the good time issue is just it's how you calculate it. You can't do away with it altogether, which is why almost no state has ever done that. Because if you did that, then your population and your violence in the prisons would just you just blow through the roof. You'd never be able to build enough.
Well, you got to an incentive to those that are incarcerated.
You got to balance it though, an incentive, but at the same time, the incentive goes to those who are truly acting the way they're supposed to. Not an incentive for I'm going to act good today, but do something terrible tomorrow while I'm in prison, because that person obviously is not rehabilitated. So that's where I think any law that gets changed, you have to figure out what that balance is.
Director, we're up against a break here, but thanks for spending a little time with us this morning and getting us caught up on stuff. And we need to talk again soon.
I look forward to it, Jeff. You have a good one, Neil.
You too. That's the director of the Bureau of Pardons and Paroles there, Cam Ward, former state senator, by the way, as well. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
What goes on in Montgomery at midnight? Because Music Row ain't only in Tennessee. So won't you bury me in Dixie?